with my guest, first guest this evening, Hami Piripi, one of our iwi chairs, one of our iwi leaders, and I'm really looking forward to what he thinks of the outcome of the 2023 election, which, as I say, has not yet been finally settled until the 3rd of November, when the postal ballots, postal voting will be counted, but still we've got an idea of what's ahead. Kia ora, Hami. Nice to talk with you this evening.
Kia ora, Murupika. Nice to talk to you too.
Well, Hami. I mean, obviously, the tide did turn and run blue. There was no doubt about that. But the Māori seats and the two that are still, I suppose you could say, not yet decided and could still go either way, I think. I'm not too sure. But that was certainly, I mean, because I'm a Te Pāti Māori, obviously a Te Pāti Māori member, but I thought that was a great outcome.
Oh, yes, it was definitely a great outcome as far as the seats go. And they, so you can see that the Māori Party is beginning to make ground in our communities and beginning to be a real alternative for our people. So that's good. But remember, you know, that's in terms of the big total, it's still only 3% of the vote. And we need to get a lot more than that to have the impact we want to be having. So yeah, even though that's gone really well for the Māori Party, on the whole, I think if you look at it from a 6-year perspective, 6 years of working to Labour's values and priorities and a strong Tiriti focus, they've achieved a heck of a lot in 6 years. And that's in the context of the massive challenges that they've had to face, in terms of the Christchurch massacre and the COVID lockdown. So a lot of their stuff, I think, they never really had a chance to fully complete. And I think that their track record was interrupted really by those catastrophes, and then there's the cyclone. But if you look at it from a retrospective perspective, we've never been better positioned in terms of the reins of power than we were in the last 6 years. We had a majority of Māori members in cabinet, one party government. We had the opportunity there to really get things over the line that were going to make a difference to our people. As a government, you know, different to being a party and everybody's got their corners of their party politics. But as a government, I don't think we'll ever be there again to have that much influence in cabinet. And really, nothing happened. And part of it was, I think, that a lot of people, including our own people, turned against the government because of the anti-vaxxing movement. All that garbage that's been spit out over the conspiracy theories, and I think our people, we got sucked into that, and we began to believe it ourselves, and it marred our perspective on what the government was actually doing for us, and we were so stupid that we even got out there and voted for New Zealand First and for ACT, who are the most redneck right wing parties in the country. And yet we were looking like we were having faith in them, and it's impossible, you know. So I think that it's an opportunity that's gone begging for us in the last 6 years. But that's politics, that's Parliament, and you know it is what it is, I suppose. So we have to just keep going, keep boxing on. And I think that maybe we'll see things a little differently now. We might do our homework around voting and work out who's best to vote for the next election. Right now, I think we're really given our... If we were playing a game of 500, we would have just shown our cards to everybody. Yeah, because we're just riding along on this sort of bandwagon of conspiracy theory and somehow the government's not doing right by us. But this government has done the most in terms of recognising the treaty partnership than any other government's ever done, and so it seems it's amazing to me, to see that happen. But having said that, you know, we just got to keep on working at it, because the issues remain, and we have to just pick ourselves up, dust ourselves down, and pin our hopes on the Māori Party, I guess, because they're the only ones who really have done any good out of the process in terms of progress that we might make. But you never know. The government may see sense. I think once they start to begin to try and unpick some of the jurisprudence and precedential decisions that have been made in the past, you know, 50 years of treaty jurisprudence, it's very, very hard to undo it. And we're in an international spotlight now, and the whole world's watching us, and we'll be like Australia. We'll lose our voice too if we're not careful.
Well, that's very true. And what I do think, and you know, you've just mentioned that, the mandate, yes, and everything that went with COVID. And I think that, the public, I think that our politicians, particularly the government, the previous government, the one who was just booted out over the weekend, I think they underestimated the public reaction to the enforced lockdowns. Yeah. To the MIQ situation, and particularly the last lockdown in Auckland. And I think New Zealanders were just waiting for a government that actually showed more empathy, perhaps compassion and understanding that people were starting to hurt and to hurt badly. And I don't know whether it was they knew, but they seemed to have a little bit of an era of indifference. And I think, Hami, that was the start of people, in New Zealand starting to turn. And I might add, if you look all around the world, the governments that have that were in power in place during the COVID and were doing their best to try and help their citizens, they have been on the receiving end of anti-authority, anti-government rhetoric. In the last year or two. So, you know, I think that perhaps governments around and politicians around the world they underestimated how people were feeling about enforced lockdowns and what it actually meant to them, their communities, and for us in New Zealand, our areas and our regions. I just think that was the start of the turning against, the leadership that we have, our elected leaders around the, not only around New Zealand, but also around the country, around the world as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's a phenomenon you can't really do anything about because it's in people's minds, you know. And it takes a lot to win a person's mind over, particularly if they're in what they're perceiving as a threatening situation. So it's unfortunate, but you know we're still here. We're not going anywhere, and we've got plenty of work to do as we progress.
And we still have got plenty of work to do. And I mean, I'm looking now at. You want to wish you do want to wish your government well, and I would rather that the National had sufficient numbers on their own to sufficient numbers that they could form a government without having ACT there, and certainly not without having New Zealand First there, because I don't know what it's going to look like. How do you? Well, you might know this, Hami, you've been around for a long time, but how does a government that comes into power have to try to negotiate with two other parties who probably don't share many of your bottom lines? And how do you try and strike a balance and accommodate their wishes as you start to formulate your government and certainly the portfolios and who's going to be who in the zoo sort of thing in terms of portfolios? Yes.
Especially when it's not their first rodeo.
No, it's not. And I don't know whether you saw the article by Ron Marks that talked about, because he was a negotiator, I think, on two occasions with Winston Peters. And I thought he gave a very good snapshot in terms of a look at what is involved, and certainly from his experience about being at the side of Winston Peters when he was negotiating to form two coalition governments. And what he did say and make quite clear was that in his view, Winston Peters does always want to do the best that he can for the government of the day, and making sure that remaining true to the mandate that he was putting out and supporting that got him his numbers to get over 5%. So I found that very interesting reading yesterday.
Well, yeah, he played it so well, didn't he? And it shows you that, you know, if you know the game, you can do well. And I think that he knows the game so well that he was able to play it and predict how things were going to go, and he turned out to be perfect, you know. It's just a shame he's not singing our policies.
That's right. Well, the Labour, the former government, they've gone. They've lost 31 members of Parliament. They've lost 31, and so their numbers have basically halved. So they're down to 34, and it must be because Andrew Little has already signalled he's off. He's not going to stay, and his leaving government now. He's not going to. He doesn't want to be in opposition, obviously. And he said he's making room for others. But he's the first to go, and I don't think he'll be the last to go.
No, I don't think. And you know, this is the nature of politics, of course. When you get situations like these, you do need to clean out and kick off again, and that's what they're going to have to do. So you know, good luck to them with that, because they got 3 or maybe 4 years to. To prepare to have another go at it, but I think that the National Coalition, they're not going to find it as easy as they thought. I don't think, because it's a big ship to turn around.
And well, the other thing, of course, too, is Harmy, that National, they've got about. Is it 19? No, though it's more than 19. It's probably getting up to 30 as well. Newbies too. So if they've got 30 new, they would. They'd have about 30 newbies too. So, and I mean, they're all new, first timers. So, you know, to be able to articulate and debate on the floor of the House some of those issues that maybe they're not familiar with, it's going to be a steep learning curve for many of them. So, you know, that's going to be interesting.
Have a very vociferous opposition.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be an easy argument for them to win.
No. No, it's going to be, it really is going to be interesting. Now, what about Chris Hipkins? Now, you know, of course, he said, I understand that he says he'd like to stay on for some time as the leader. And I guess that would be good because, you know, when you go from when your caucus has been halved and you've lost 31 and you've retained 34, then maybe, you know, maybe he should think about staying at least for the next 6 months you know, an experienced person like Chris Hipkins.
A real leader to stand up, you know?
Yeah.
If he's a real leader, he'll stay standing. But I'll tell you something about him, is that I've worked with a lot of ministers over the years, and he's one of the most intelligent men I've met. So he works hard, he's clever, he's adept, and so he's a good, reliable a leader. And at the moment, we're a bit short on those. So, yeah, I think.
Well, you are. That's true. Labour is a bit short of them, and the other thing too is, for him to exit now, and as the leader of the opposition, he must be able to stand up and respond and put those issues or challenge some of those comments and issues that Luxon would be putting out, you know, on the floor of the House, and who better than Chris Hipkins to do it. So I hope his caucus, his much reduced, his halved caucus, will keep him there, because I think in the meantime, it's very, very necessary.
Oh, yeah, it is. And we have to hold the government to account. Or they have to hold the government to account, you know, because there's been lots of things said. And I think some of the things that have been promised in the course of the campaign are so far out there that, you know, how could you possibly think that could come true? But, well, we'll see how they go, because you never know. Some stranger things have happened.
Now,
I know that the act and policies, you know, the referendum, A referendum on the treaty for us would be a terrible thing to happen, because it's really interfering in the law with politics. And we've got 50 years of agreements and court decisions and right up to the Privy Council and back in terms of treaty interests and rights. And to try and subvert that with a referendum is really not a very good concoction for the society.
Well, I think you're right, and I think it is trying to subvert, subvert what is currently in place. I think you're right. And, you know, when you have a referendum, I like to think that everybody at least is going to be have the same, is going to be informed enough to be able to debate well and to discuss well and have those hard conversations about the treaty. But the average New Zealander, and let's be honest, Hami, the average New Zealander is ignorant of the treaty, the background and the history of our country, its application in New Zealand society today. So why would you have a referendum when you know the majority are ignorant?
And not only that, we're only 16% of the population.
That's right.
So we'll be right at the bottom of the wish list with the Australian Aboriginals.
Look,
just be strong and be robust in our thinking and firm in our decision making and remain committed to each other, I think.
Well, I don't believe, Hami, that that Maori will allow that a referendum to happen. I don't believe so. I think that we will stand up, because we have, you know, we'll stand up and we'll speak up and we'll show up where necessary, wherever that might be, to just show that there is no way we're going back to the racist rhetoric and actions that used to be in New Zealand and you know, in your face in New Zealand 50 years ago. There is no way. We have made progress. It has been hard won. It has been, any progress that we have made has been from the grassroots up. And we have funded most of these initiatives ourselves. And so we will not go back. And I suspect that the government would definitely be buying into a real pitchfork fight if they were think about a referendum on the treaty.
We have to have faith maybe in our Pākehā friends that they will stand up for this too. You know, because we don't want just us complaining about it. Any right-thinking New Zealander should be thinking about it, because what you said earlier is quite right. The Treaty of Waitangi is a theme that brings people together, doesn't divide them.
Yeah.
And that is just a pure logical thought. Anybody with a modicum of common sense would understand that. And I just cannot understand why some of our right-leaning leaders don't think that, because the logic is clear. Mm. It seems disingenuous not to believe that. Yeah. So we have to just get our Pākehā friends to stand by us side by side and say, come on, let's go march into an equitable future together.
Mm. Yes, well, if they don't, they'll be a very divided and, a very, what would you say? Yeah, it'll be just a very divided country that will end up having, and nobody wants that. Nobody in their right mind wants that.
We can't afford that sort of thing in the world today. Just look around and see what's happening. We don't want that. We need to avoid that like the plague. Those poor old blooming Palestinians, crikey. That's where it leads to. That's the end product if we let issues like this divide us and bring about conflict.
That's right. That's right. So that's why we want absolutely outstanding leadership. Now, tell me, talking about leadership, now the Iwi Leaders Group that you're a part of, so I guess you'll be meeting soon to talk about, when do you meet? The 5th?
The 7th of November.
Oh, that's great. So you'll know who the government is by then. Are you taking, did I see something? Are you hitting the road? Are you doing a road show around, is it just for the Iwi leaders and those who are already affiliated to that? You're not doing a road show for Ngā Iwi Katoa?
Ngā
Whānau Katoa? No, it's just for your members.
Information sharing.
Oh, good. And is that with other Iwi throughout the Motu?
Yeah, well, yeah, there's, I think there's 74 iwi now that are affiliated to the forum.
Gosh.
And the best thing about that is that every organization who has become a member is a democratically elected, mandated representative. Yeah. So every person is a chairperson. They were nominated, seconded, voted for on a certain day at a certain time, and the records will show. When you've got 74 leaders mandated like that, you've got a strong platform for action.
Absolutely.
And that's what we've been relying on so far. Hopefully the current leadership will see the potential in that as well. Because nothing like a strong mandate to drive things forward, I think.
Mm.
And we have to just work with that mandate and try and get it to work for us in that political arena. We've got some Maori people in there too in the National Party. So we're everywhere, in one form or another, and we won't be able to be ignored. That's for sure.
Yeah, well, you're quite right. I was actually rather sorry to see that Harite, what's her name? Pango, the national lady. Hipango, that's right. I was disappointed she wasn't higher up on the list, because I can tell you she's paid her dues to that party, absolutely.
Yeah.
And of course she wasn't high up, and so she missed out. And then when I'm looking at all the others who got in, well, I mean, you know, some of them took electorate seats, but she just wasn't high up enough on the list to get back in.
The person who's the greatest casualty, in my view, is Nanaia Mahuta. Because she is the longest-serving parliamentarian. She has devoted her entire life to fight for the rights and interests of Maori people. She's the most experienced minister in cabinet. Mm-hmm. And her own people voted her out.
Yeah, and I just can't
get over that.
Mm. Well, they did too. They did too. And I guess what it says is that there's just a changing of the guard. I think people just thought, here's a young person, a few years younger than Nanaia when Nanaia entered Parliament. And of course, young Hana has come through the Kohanga Reo movement, Kura Kaupapa. You know, she's absolutely steeped in her whakapapa. And I just think that I think perhaps some of the older whānau and perhaps the kingitanga just thought she is the face of the modern leadership, and maybe we should bring her through earlier rather than later. And so they did that, and of course they did it also for a Rino, Te Re Kākne, down in south, Te Taitunga as well.
You never know, it might happen to Kelvin.
Well, Kelvin and Penne.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it could happen to Penne. So, you know, and so if it does, because it's still, I think there's over 500,000 special votes to count.
Of course, yeah, and I think in this instance, the people who are voting from overseas won't have quite the same perspective as us.
No,
and I think they will tend to go along with that right wing message. And if they do, boy, damage could be even further.
Yeah. Of course,
the Maori Party is on the rise.
Yeah, and that is true. That is true. But you know something? When I was particularly in the last 6 weeks before the election, and then everybody was starting to follow the polls. I think they started about maybe 9 weeks, and then the 6 weeks, and then they became weekly after that. And I was watching, and I thought, who the hell do they poll? Because in some instances, they were really off. First of all, when they said, you know, when they said the, was it Soraya was going to take out Debbie, and then even Rawiri, they said, was obviously, he was a bit dicky there as well. He was vulnerable. And then, of course, got anything but. So, you know, it just makes you wonder sometimes. So that's why I place a very little store on the polls.
Oh yes, because you know the way our population is in cohorts, our opinion will be very, very hard to get an accurate perspective on, because we're such a low percentage of the population, and we'd be always outnumbered by the other people who are asking the questions. Mm. We wouldn't have a clue how we live.
That's true.